on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook.
The Sportscast. Expect the unexpected.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
May 18th, 2024. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, X, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. You can also visit our website, thesportscast.net. Also, follow us on X and Instagram, thesportscast1. Check out our app, The Sportscast, for iOS. The Boston Celtics win their 18th championship. It's been a while, but they beat the Lakers. And join us to celebrate, Hal Phillips. Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Thank you, Santi. It's a pleasure. On this morning of the 18th banner being raised. It has been a long time. You know, they've only been two championships since 1986 for the Celtics, and that's not very many. So people are tired about maybe hearing about the Celtics and how much they win, but it really hasn't been that crazy in the win department all my adult life.
No, it's an incredible run, very historic. And, you know, we were talking about it before the show, like you were kind of surprised this series. I can't say the word easy, but it was not as difficult as you thought it would be. Tell us your thoughts on that.
Well, I think we'll get to the part of our discussion where we give plenty of credit because plenty of credit is due. But, you know, I know this team intimately, and one of the things they are famous for doing is making very tough work of series and games that shouldn't be. And that sounds crazy because we're talking about a team that I think won 81 games and lost only 20. But because they're so three-point centric, when they shot poorly, they struggled. And I thought for sure they would struggle more with Dallas and lose two games, not one, in the course of this series. And I'm happy to report that I was mistaken, but I am surprised. They shot very poorly from three, really the first three, four games of this series, and still managed to win three of them. So their penchant for, you know, running out of steam, you know, we saw it in game two, I guess. And we saw it in game one, especially when they just went cold and they couldn't score. And all of a sudden a 28-point lead was an 8-point lead. But again, the law of averages, and we have to start thinking about basketball in this way. The law of averages are such that you're not going to shoot that bad forever. And I actually said, oh geez, look what happens. They're going to go down to eight and then they're going to find the range again. And that's exactly what happened. And they ended up winning that game going away. So, an amazing team that's been assembled here. I think it is the best team in basketball. It's a little surprising to me that they didn't have more trouble with Dallas, who I thought was very good. But when you look at the West, we just drooled all over all the teams in the West. And I think the Celtics are the best team in basketball. So that was all a bunch of lip service.
Indeed. Let's go look at what happened in game five last night. Jason Tatum had 31 points, 11 assists, and 8 rebounds. Finals MVP, Jaylen Brown, had 21 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. I mean, and then, of course, Jrue Holiday as well had a big performance. He scored 26 points. But these three, I would say, Brown, Holiday, and Tatum, were definitely the highlight of this team, this core. What are your thoughts on their performances?
Well, the first thing I'd say is so much for the best player on the floor theory. I've never liked it. I always thought it was very simplistic. The Celtics purposely built the deepest team in the league. And so what if Luka Doncic is a better player than Jason Tatum overall, which I think you could argue. So what if he's better than Jaylen Brown overall? LeBron James won series where he was the best player on the floor, and he lost series where he was the best player on the floor, mostly to better teams than his. So I think that is one way to look at it. I thought Tatum was tremendous in this game. He just matured a ton, and I think they had 19 assists between he and Jaylen Brown by halftime. When your two best players have done that, you have a team. You don't have a single great player. I salute Luka. I think he's an amazing player. And if they can add a piece or two, they're going to be very, very good. Kyrie was terrible in this game again. And boy, I think he's 1-14 against the Celtics now since he left in such abject fashion. And boy, they gave it to him yesterday. I sort of feel bad for him now. I also feel bad for Marcus Smart, who got traded away and they immediately win an NBA title. I love Marcus Smart. I love his game. I love his passion. And I know it ripped his heart out to leave the Celtics, a team that he had been part of for so long. But I thought of him the other night, last night, when it was all over, because it must be a terrible blow to think that you were holding the team back. And maybe he was, but geez, Jrue Holiday was an upgrade. Interesting. I think the MVP, you know, I don't really care about those things, but I think it was well and truly earned by Jaylen Brown, if only because this guy played Doncic man up and just did not ever falter and didn't even want to come out of the game last night until Luka had come out. This guy is an extraordinary player and person, and is as good defensively as he is offensively. And so I think the MVP was deserved in that case. Tatum can get better defensively and maybe he will get better. But I certainly don't want to encourage any kind of rivalry between the two of them. I think they're bigger than that. And a lot of people, myself included, had real worries about these two guys and whether or not we could ever win anything with them. Halfway through the Ime Udoka season, which was 2021-22, you know, they were a 500 team and they caught fire and they've been an elite team ever since that. It's been two plus years now. And Jaylen Brown has just gotten better and better, and so has Tatum. Were they ever better than Luka or Jokic? No, but you can still win an NBA title when that's not true.
How do you think this core can be stick together for a few more years and maybe create a dynasty perhaps? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. MVPs are like dynasties. I don't care about them. I think they're lazy sports writer thinking. But I think they can win again. I think someone on my Hoop chat last night was like, you know, fix the zinger and go for 19. I saw Porzingis described by, I think, Vincent Cunningham at the New Yorker as the skeleton key that unlocks the Celtics. And he really is a singular player on this team. He makes them almost unbeatable in a series. And if they can get his foot healthy, I don't see why they can't win again. But that's a big ask because the zinger has never played a full season or been particularly healthy. Elsewhere, I'm sure they'll add a piece or two, and this team is going to be just as good next year. Sam Hauser, who you have pictured there on screen guarding Doncic, really showed himself to be a useful player, a 6'9 guy who can rebound and just jack threes and play a little defense. Peyton Pritchard's a good player. They've got a deep roster of 8 or 9 guys. Horford may retire, and they may have to get another big guy. I'm really happy for Al Horford, who never won. I think he now gets out of that race for the most playoff games without winning a championship. But this team is totally capable of winning another title, and I'm sure they'll win 60 games next year. I just hope they get the Nuggets, because I think that would be an interesting series. I'm fascinated by the way we thought about the Western Conference playoffs now in retrospect. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah, I thought they would come a little bit tougher, whoever it was, maybe 6 games, but I did not see this kind of type of blowout for this level of like the NBA. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, more and more it seems like, or it feels like, the Minnesota result over Denver was not a travesty of justice, but a bit of a one-off. And would Denver have beaten the Nuggets? I would lay my life on that. They would have beaten the Nuggets in a series. And that means we would have had the Nuggets and the Celtics, and I think that would have been an outstanding series. I still believe the Nuggets and the Celtics are the best teams in this league. And somehow Minnesota beat them, and a bunch of pundits were talking about Minnesota being a generational defensive team. They couldn't even beat the Mavericks in a series. And here we are. But it's just fascinating to look back on it and think about how the emotions and the thought processes ebb and flow during a postseason.
Was that the best series of the whole playoffs, Minnesota and the Nuggets?
Yes, I believe so.
I would say so.
And it was great. I mean, it was great theater, and I love the Minnesota team. They really came of age, and I think they're going to be a very good team, even if whoever ends up owning that team is going to have to pay through the nose to keep it together. Denver doesn't have that problem. They've already laid out that cash, and I believe they're going to come back very, very motivated to kick some ass next year. But that was the best series, I thought. And the West continues to be loaded with very good teams. The four teams that made the conference semifinals, excellent teams. All of them could win a championship. But the idea that just because there's more quality uniformly in the West still doesn't get around the fact that the Celtics had the best team this year. They had the best roster. They had the best season-long performance. And come the playoffs, they went 16-3. It's hard to be better than that.
What if there was a stronger Miami Heat next year?
I don't think that's happening. I mean, every single player on that team that matters except for Bam is getting older. Jimmy Buckets, I think, is such a big part of that team. Look, they'll come back and they'll be stronger. And I think we can say that about the Knicks. And I think we can say that about Milwaukee, who really struggled this year with injuries. I'm not sure Philly is ever going to get itself together. The Embiid formula there is difficult. And they don't seem to have the ability to attract first-rate free agents. We'll see what happens. But one more thing I wanted to say was, I thought of Marcus Smart last night after the win, but I also thought of Ime Udoka, who coached this team in 21-22 when they ended up losing to the Golden State Warriors in an NBA Finals that the Celtics could have won. They were up 2-1 in that series. They just weren't old enough and clever enough to beat that veteran team. But the defense that Celtics team finally figured out how to play was Udoka's defense. He's now with Houston. It's a long and sordid tale as to how he left the Celtics and then was hired in Houston. And that's irrelevant to my point. He's an outstanding defensive coach. He made this team the defensive team that they are today. And that is really what won them a championship, because they did go through some horrendous shooting slumps this season. And it's going to happen to any team that bases its offense so strictly on the three-point shot. They always were able to endure that ultimately because they played defense so well. And just to come back around to a point I meant to make 5 minutes ago, Jaylen Brown is a deserving MVP in this series because defensively he had the toughest assignment. He took Luka Doncic and, you know, you don't shut that man down, but wore him out and took a lot of the sting out of his game. And when it came to taking up the slack, Kyrie Irving was not up to it, and nobody else on that roster in Dallas was anywhere near up to it. So he stripped down and stripped away all of Dallas's assets by himself. So I thought, and still managed to score 23 a game or something like that and contribute on the offensive end, a deserving MVP in my book.
You know, looking at the Mavericks, do you think, I mean, obviously you said like the Nuggets might return back to this level next year, but what do you think about this team? You know, Luka and Kyrie, they had a good combination. They really did. But you were saying they need another piece, don't they?
Yeah, but only one. I mean, they just need a front court player that has an offensive capability, because right now neither of their centers do. PJ Washington is a corner three shooter, and Derek Jones is purely a defensive player. So if they had a player, you know, like John Collins, who went out to Utah, who can play some offense and rebound and provide some size, but also you can drop the ball in and score on the block, they would be a more difficult team to play. I think they're already a very good team and a very difficult team for certain teams to play. I think that's another thing we have to bear in mind when we're talking about the Nuggets and the Celtics. I think they are the two best teams in the NBA.
I agree. Yeah. But obviously, like the mishap with with Minnesota. So
yeah, but that wasn't a mishap. That was Minnesota building a team designed to beat Denver, and it worked. They just weren't designed to beat the Mavericks.
And they got to go back to the drawing board.
So, you know, everyone has to design their roster to beat the teams they have to beat in the West and the East, depending on where you are. And I don't think that Miami, with respect, you know, to my South Florida running mate here, Santi, I don't think that the Heat are an elite team going forward. I think that Milwaukee is, and I think that the Knicks want to be, and I think that Philadelphia could be, and maybe Miami will sign two guys and change all of that. But the Celtics aren't really saddled with any of these issues because their roster was so diverse and deep. They could really match up with anybody. I thought that Dallas had just a terrible time matching up with the Celtics.
Yeah, exactly. Quite something. And I want to give credit to Kyrie. He had a good goodbye leaving the game, giving hugs to most of the players from these Celtics. I thought that was a good good way to say, hey guys, I'm, you know, whatever happened in Boston, I'm sorry, but you know, thanks, congratulations on winning this championship.
In his defense, I think that very few Celtics themselves hold any animosity towards Kyrie. That is all BS fan response, you know, to I'm dedicating my life, I want to be a Celtic for life, and then he goes off on free agency. I mean, that's never happened. Of course, it happens everywhere now. Who cares? I'm sure the players don't mind much. Hey, one more shout out too. The meanest thing that anyone ever said about Joe Mazzulla was they called him second row Joe. Did you ever hear that?
I never heard of that.
Oh, so in Boston, that's what they called him because no one knew who he was when Udoka got fired and Joe Mazzulla was named the replacement. And we're like, who's this guy? He's one of those five assistant coaches in the second row. You know, they've got 8, 9, 10 coaches now on every NBA team. So in a dismissive way, he was known as second row Joe, and it was mean. And, but it was, a little dicey there for a while. He didn't seem to like to call timeouts and just very live and let live coaching style. But, anybody who called him that has to stop now because he is an NBA title winning coach, and congratulations to him.
Yeah, and I heard a story that a general manager or president of the Celtics, Danny Ainge, actually recruited him to join the team as an assistant, as a head coach, and then look how he rose. He's only 35, Al.
The youngest NBA title winning coach since Bill Russell, who was a player coach. Wow. So yeah, very young. Look, he's a smart guy, and he's definitely committed to a certain style of play, and that's why he was on this staff. I mean, Udoka brought him in, and Udoka wanted them shooting threes as well. That's the way this team was constructed. But Udoka was a defensive coach. That's what he brought to this team, and you know, the style of play offensively didn't change that much. And the style of play didn't change defensively or offensively that much when Udoka left. But Mazzulla did a great job. He pulled all the right strings in the playoffs this year after not pulling them so well last year. But we all learn. We all live and learn. Another shout out to Brad Stevens. What an incredible roster this guy built.
Correct.
Brad Stevens was an incredible coach for the Celtics when this team was young. And before this team showed up, you know, he had a ragtag group all through the teens, the 2010s. They just weren't that good. But I saw those games, and he turned middling players into good players. He turned good players into great players. Does that mean that any of them, contributed to a championship? No, but I mean, he took a terrible team to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think it was in 2018. Avery Bradley and Isaiah Thomas. I mean,
Isaiah Thomas. I thought he was going to be the future of that team.
Anybody who thought that Isaiah Thomas is your future you got problems. I mean, I loved Isaiah Thomas, but he was an anomalous player, a one of a kind sort of talent who can only do so much for you. Great sixth man, come in, instant offense, what have you. But look, I thought Brad Stevens showed that he could get the best out of middling players and improve players, which is no small matter. And when he became the coach, when they brought in Udoka and moved Brad Stevens upstairs, none of us knew that he had this ability to be Trader Danny Ainge part two. But this team is homegrown. Obviously, their two biggest stars are draft picks. But bringing Horford back, snagging Porzingis, and signing Jrue Holiday, A plus.
Alex Cork, he's on the Jersey Boys Sports Talk on Thursday sometimes. He says Brad Stevens is the executive of the year. Hal nods his head.
Absolutely. I don't know how you could argue against him.
Very good. Very, you know, came from college, went to Boston and just rechanged it. That is a championship institution up there. So we'll see what happens in the future. We'll see if they win it again. I think they will. I think they'll definitely represent the East again next year.
Yeah. I think that Philadelphia and Milwaukee, when they're healthy, are tough. And you never know. The one thing this team doesn't have is a big banger to deal with Embiid. And he was hurt. I love Embiid's game, and I feel bad that he keeps getting hurt because I think he's been cheated a little bit. But just to be sure, I mean, the world is really tired of, I should say, the United States is really tired of Boston sports teams winning things. We've won a ton in the 21st century, and I recognize that. But for the Celtics to have won two championships since 1986, that's not a lot. And, you know, all my growing up, I grew up in Boston. You know, we won two championships in the 70s. We won three in the 80s. That's what we were used to. So it feels like a drought to us. And we couldn't be happier to be ahead of the Lakers again with 18 banners.
Exactly. Congratulations once again. Anyway, the shift towards the Euros. We're running out of time here because we're so excited about the NBA. But the Euro started on Friday. Germany beat Scotland 5-1. Significant score there. Another score that I really want to point out, Spain beating Croatia 3-0. Mm-hmm. And Romania yesterday beat Ukraine 3-0, which was a huge surprise for a lot of people. England beat Serbia just 1-0, but I heard Serbia is really good. So nothing to worry about. And then yesterday, France beating Austria 1-0. But your thoughts on the Euros so far, Hal?
Well, I love the Euros. It's arguably the best tournament in the world because there's just no bunnies in this group. Every team in every group is good. Whereas in a World Cup, you're going to get a team from CONCACAF or from Africa that's just okay. So it's really wonderful that every game matters. I mean, Austria, France yesterday, Austria is good. And anybody who watched that game understands that now. And that is carried forward in that group in a meaningful way. I just love to let a tournament like this wash over you. You watch what you can. You check out your key plays on YouTube TV, and because you don't have time to watch every game. I noticed that the Romania game wasn't even on Fox. It was apparently there's five games that aren't.
Fubu.
They're on Fubo. And is it Fubu or Fubo?
Fubo. I don't know. Depends who you ask.
Anyway, some people are pissed that they don't get those games. I'll live without Romania, Ukraine, or Switzerland.
It was Switzerland, Hungary, 3-1, Switzerland.
we'll all survive. England didn't look great. One of the things we learned at the World Cup, and or should remember because it happens in most every tournament, is the team that wins the tournament is the one that gets better as the tournament goes along. And if you win your first game in extraordinary fashion, that's a very difficult level to maintain. Argentina lost their opening game against the Saudis in Qatar, and they got a little better every time, every round, every game. And by the time they played the final, they were a winning unit. So the fact that France and England started poorly is not the end of the world. It's a time for teams to come out and stake a claim. What better way to do it than to put in a good showing against England? I mean, I don't think Spain is going to play that well again in this tournament. You know, they're going to play Italy on Thursday, and I will bet you dollars to donuts that the Italians win that game because that's the way the tournament works. Great matchup. I like the Czech Republic and Portugal later today as well. In fact, it might be on now, and I've missed it.
It's at 3 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, good.
Right now it's Turkey and Georgia.
So what's the score?
It's 1-1.
Oh, okay. Don't tell me anymore. I won't tell you.
The weather looks nice, by the way, because it's
summer. We've alluded to it, and now we've got it's finally here. We've got the Euros underway. Copa America starts Thursday. The States play their opener on Sunday, and what a 6 weeks this is going to be.
It's going to be crazy. How now? Tell me, from what you saw so far, who do you think will win the Euros?
I guess I was sort of surprised that France had only won twice. They won in 1984 with Platini, and they won in 2000 with Zidane. And they should have won in 2016 They had the best team and they were playing at home and they lost to Portugal in that amazing final. So I would go with France because I guess that this team is very good. They're a generational team and they've really only won one trophy. 2018 in Russia, the World Cup. I think they're a good enough unit and talented and deep enough to win two major trophies, and maybe this will be the second one. So I guess they're my pick. But as always, I just want to see the good football, and I want to see excellent quarterfinals because that's where the meat of the matter is sorted out.
There is a caveat for France. Yesterday, Mbappe injured his nose. I've not heard broken nose, but I heard injured his nose. He was bleeding by a lot. He might not play against Holland this Friday. Would that be an issue? Because I know France has a lot of stars. Don't get me wrong; like they could win without Mbappe. But how big is that?
If he doesn't, France has a ton of players. They can plug in there, and he'll get a mask on and probably play. Maybe not against the Netherlands, but against someone in their third group game. I'm not hearing anything dire about that. It's a broken nose. Holy, it is what it is.
Yeah. Exactly. So there you have it. Euros 2024. As Hal said, want to allude to it. This is probably the next, probably the best international tournament after the World Cup. It's a lot. It's really heavy. A lot of good teams. A lot of these players playing in Europe. So looking forward to what's going to happen. It's going to be a slugfest. Copa America begins this weekend. Of course, the U.S. men's had a great performance against Brazil. What do you expect to see when they play against Bolivia this weekend?
Well, I hope they deliver a good performance. They saved their ass. They saved their coach's ass with that result against Brazil. And I guess that's a little dramatic, but the game against Colombia was so poor, or I should say the result was so poor. I thought the performance was okay for about 60 minutes, but we'll see. They should take care of Bolivia, although Bolivia has a new coach and they are unbeaten under him. So they've been the doormat of CONMEBOL for the last couple of years, but they should be okay. Panama, we know, is a capable side, and then they play Uruguay. It's nothing different. I think that the game against Uruguay will not only determine, you know, where we go in the second stage, because I do expect them to advance, but I think it'll also determine Greg Berhalter's fate. There is plenty of time to change coaches between, you know, now and the World Cup 2 years from now.
And no qualifiers.
No qualifiers. So how else do we judge him? This is a chance to play teams outside of CONCACAF. Greg Berhalter has done everything he needed to do within CONCACAF. He keeps beating Mexico. He keeps qualifying his team for major tournaments. But ultimately, we want to beat teams from Europe. We want to beat teams from South America, and he hasn't done it. So I've defended him. I think that he has a chance to show everybody that he is the coach he thinks he is, and that his own players think that he is. They like the guy. They play for him. So it's really another fan situation, not a player situation. But everyone, I think, agrees that he has to get this team to the semis in order to keep his job. And if they don't beat Uruguay, they're going to end up playing Colombia, Argentina, or Brazil in a quarterfinal. And that's going to be a big ask. They've got to win the group to avoid those teams and make the semis.
Exactly. All three matches are must wins. Even though we have 6 points coming to Uruguay, we got to beat Uruguay. I'm sorry.
Right. And, you know, again, we sort of assume the shorthand when you're talking about these groups is, oh, Uruguay wins, the U.S. wins, and they play each other for all the marbles at the end. It never happens that way. Uruguay could screw up and, you know, draw with Bolivia, or Panama could steal a game from them. This stuff can happen. Teams are not infallible. People get hurt. And as we've already seen in the Euros, good teams don't always win. Who saw Belgium losing to Slovakia?
I did not see that coming.
Exactly.
That team is stacked, by the way.
You have to hold. Sorry, what?
That team is stacked.
They are stacked. They remain stacked. What they don't have that they used to have was a defense. They used to have Vertonghen and Alderweireld in front of Courtois. None of those guys are there. So, but they didn't lose to Slovakia because they gave up a bunch of goals. They didn't score a bunch of chances that they had created. But anyway, Uruguay is very, very good. We've seen it. And I hope we have a chance to play them for all the marbles. But it could be a situation where both teams come in having won and tied, or it could be a situation where Uruguay has tied a match and the U.S. has two wins, and then the U.S. has to be smart. Then you have to play that game for a tie. You know, and is this team technically capable enough to do that? Is Berhalter strategically capable of getting his team, you know, prepared to do that against a good side? All these things are revealed in tournament play in a way they aren't in friendlies, and I can't wait.
Can't wait. Starts this weekend, Copa America, USA versus Bolivia. Definitely watch it. Predictions, who you have between Portugal and Czech Republic?
I really think Portugal's really good, and if you're asking me for a dark horse in the Euros, I would pick Portugal. So I guess I'm going to pick Portugal, but you know, anything can happen and they can lose that game and still go through. But they're so deep. They're so deep.
And prediction for USA Bolivia.
I'm going to take the USA 3-1.
3-1 sounds fair. There you have it. Copa America Euros. You can't complain this summer. A lot going on. Hal, what is the best way to reach you online to reach you?
Right there below, genzero.halphillips.net is the companion site to my book, Generation Zero. And it's also what you see there on the yellow box is also my handle for Threads and Instagram.
There you have it. You can reach us at thesportscast.net and also the Sportscast on X and Instagram. Did you see that meme this morning, Hal, with Landon Donovan with his hair transplant issue?
I have not. Has Landy Cakes gone and gotten a hair job?
He got a hair job, and it was trending on Instagram all morning. So he actually said that he was like the cameraman was not supposed to get that angle of him where his hair was not a little bit cut. It looked pretty awkward, but Landon Donovan still making headlines. Good commentator, I think. So we'll see what happens.
I like Landon Donovan, and I like him as a commentator, but trust me, the hair on TV thing is a minefield, so you're not going to hear me picking on him.
Yeah, and definitely try not to do it before the Euros. Try to do it a couple of months after or before, because things can get a little crazy, which I think I could pull it up right now.
Oh, you're good, Santi. You're working in the moment.
I'm working in the moment. I got it up.
Oh, there you go. Oh. Yeah.
That was pretty bad. Look at the angle. Oh, my gosh. Anyways. I don't Landon know. Donovan.
My brother just shaved his head, and you know, I feel like I'm just sort of biding my time until I do the same thing. And Landon's young, he's fit. He should probably go that direction. But maybe the TV people want him to do it. Who knows?
Who knows? Maybe there's not a Donovan like you know, probably a hater out there, but we'll see. Anyways.
But look at that nice hair that Ian Dark has. Isn't it distinguished? That's what I'm going for. That is.
I can see
I'm
a fan having that haircut this weekend for the USA Bolivia match in the fan face. Anyways, so much fun. Hal, congratulations, and I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Always my pleasure, Santi. Talk to you soon.
This was your update.